Hello, and welcome to the Uncharted podcast, where we explore possibilities in higher education through uplifting conversations and inspiring ideas. I'm Tara Hargrove, one of your hosts for today, and with me is today's co-host, Becky St. Clair. Hi, Becky.
Hey, Tara. I'm excited to be here today, as always.
Me too. All right. For our listeners, thanks for joining us here in Uncharted. Today, we're going to be talking with Milbert Mariano, Dean of the School of Arts, Humanities, and Professions here at PUC, about the unique value of the Honors Program, his recent course taught in Italy, and how faculty and staff can help students discover who they are and where they're headed, along with possibilities for cross-disciplinary collaboration and connection across campus. Welcome to the Uncharted podcast, Milbert.
Well, it is my pleasure to be here, Becky and Tara.
Yeah,
thank you for having me.
Sure. We're glad you're here.
Yeah. Start by telling us what drew you into the dean role, not just what appealed to you about it, include that, but also like how did you end up there?
Yeah, well, I had taught in the visual arts department for 24 years.
Wow.
And of those 24, 12 of them were chair. Okay. And so as chair, you know, I helped build a lot of things, the program, their work on their curriculum, program reviews, all the things that academics do, plus also be in a very creative space. Mm. And so, but I also felt that 12 years is enough time to be a chair of a department.
That's a long time.
So then I passed it on to another very qualified colleague of mine. Mm-hmm. And within just a couple months of not being chair and being a faculty member, I thought in my head, I really like administration. Maybe one of these days I'll go into maybe being the associate academic dean. That was what I was thinking in my head. But within a month of that time period, the president at the time asked me to come to his office after a committee meeting, and I was scared. The president wants me in his office.
Not always good.
I was very scared. And then he brought me into his office, and I had already known that the current academic dean at the time was retiring. Mm. And he said, I would like for you to apply for the academic dean role. And I was shocked.
Yeah.
I was gobsmacked, I thought. I thought to myself less than a couple weeks ago, I want to get into administration. And now the president is saying, I want you to get into administration. So I got into administration at that time. And the path was windy, and it brought me to the dean role. It's still administrative, but I did miss the classroom a little bit. And so I'm able to now teach again, but also still do administration. So I'm getting to a balance that I'm very, very comfortable with.
Whereas that's nice.
When I was doing administration, which was, of course, during a very interesting time during COVID and fires and all that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You could say that there was a little bit of burnout there.
Yeah.
And also a missing of the classroom. I didn't think I would miss the classroom as much as I did. So, but I also knew I didn't want to go back to full-time teaching. Mm. So now I'm able to do a good balance of both. So that's what got me into administration is just years of being a chair of a department and loving designing things, building things, and I guess managing things.
Yeah. So. And apparently doing well enough that the president thought you could do it some more.
Yeah.
So
and
that's good.
From what, you know, after the fact, the academic dean at the time, who was Nancy LaCourte, she actually recommended that. And the president at the time thought that was a good idea.
Nice. You kind of said you got a little burnt out. So what keeps you energized in this role? You said you have both of those sides. So does that part of that
It's finding balance.
Yeah.
Because before I was doing that, I would run and do whatever exercise that I could. And while I was in that role, particularly during COVID and fires and things like that, I couldn't do some of those things. Mm-hmm. And I didn't feel like I could because I had to use every waking hour to be an administrator. And it was hard for me to get out and to find balance. And so I feel like there's a balance now and I'm able to spend a little bit more time with my family. And so
that's good. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Tell us about your family.
Oh, yeah.
Milbert.
Let's do that.
What do you want about my family?
Who's part of your family? What?
Well, my beautiful and talented wife, Julie Lee. She was an administrator here at one point, but now she's a VP at Maranatha Volunteers International. And they're out of Roseville, California, and she commutes 2 days a week. Well, 1 day a week overnight, right. But okay. She telecommutes from home, which is great.
That's nice.
And then we have our two kids. One is they're both sophomores, but one is a sophomore in college. One is a sophomore in high school here at nice. PUC Prep and one at PUC. So that's my family. They're great boys. My wife and I are both very proud of them most of the time. Sometimes we are not as proud.
Sounds like typical parenting to me.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
It is. Yeah. They keep us on our toes.
Yep. Yeah. That'll keep you energized. Or the opposite.
Or exhausted.
Yeah. Maybe both.
Yeah, it is a little bit of both.
Yeah, for sure.
Same as your role.
So here's the thing. You know, of course, it's Murphy's Law or just humbleness is anytime we think, oh, we're so proud of our boys, we'll say something like that to each other. And then within like 24 hours, those two will say something that makes us very not proud of them.
That sounds so relatable.
Yes, it does.
So being dean is not your only role here on campus.
Correct.
You are also director of the Honors Program, correct?
Yeah. I'm the director of the Honors Program. I've taught in the Honors Program since early 2000s. But it was usually a summer course and I would go abroad and plan the trips and teach the courses. And, so that was my involvement with the honors program, in the past. And then when the dean role for the new School of Arts, Humanities and Professions came up, part of that role was going to also take in the honors program, which I was very excited about because I love, like I said, I love designing things, building things, and I love the honors program as well. So
tell us a little bit about the honors program. What is it like for those of us who aren't super familiar with it?
Yeah, I would love to tell you about the honors program because a lot of people have misconceptions about the honors program. They think you have to take extra classes and things like that. So the honors program is an alternative to the general education program. Okay. So at PUC and most schools, you have your general education, you know, for higher ed, you have your general education, you know, you have your humanities courses, your science courses that everybody takes, and they're not part of your major. And so the honors program here at PUC, which was created, I think, in the early 90s, it is an alternative to the general education program. So they use collaborative, integrative courses that take care of all the requirements and the learning outcomes that you would find in the general education program. But they do it in a very unique and interesting way in which you have these primary texts, you have we find the best teachers across campus to teach these courses.
That's why I don't teach for honors.
Yet. So here's the thing. You actually do teach for the honors program, whether or not
Surprise.
You know it. So the way that the last iteration, which has lasted over a decade of the honors program, they take those courses. They take one seminar a quarter. And so for the freshman year, they take one, you know, fall, winter, spring. They take a seminar each and they're all themed. We start with narrating the quest, analyzing the arts, and scientific inquiry. And so that's the first year. Mm-hmm. And then the second year, there's three more seminars that they take. But then their third year, we integrate them across campus. Mm. And this is where you're teaching honor students in that we want them to also, and that was one of the critiques of the previous iterations of the honors program, is they were very siloed. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to break that silo somehow throughout the campus and so that they could actually take courses across campus. And we curate those courses, and we call them honors electives. And they're usually topics courses within the different programs and departments. And so the communication department has topics courses you have taught, and you, I'm sure, have taught honors students.
Probably, yes.
Specifically for the honors program.
Right.
And so,
Well, again, good. So I am one of those best teachers.
Your best teacher. Yeah. Okay, good, good.
I just want to make sure, obviously. That's what this is about.
Yeah.
Is whether it's all or about
not. Tara being.
It's a validation podcast. Welcome.
Yeah. I needed some, I guess, today. Yeah. So thank you for that.
So, yeah, that's the honors program. Right. And then they do a honors project their senior year. They actually pitch it their junior year, and then they work every quarter until they're done in their senior year. And wow. So it's a capstone, and we have had some really great senior research projects, and sometimes they can do creative projects as well, depending on their discipline.
That's cool.
Wow. So what is the value added to students to do that program?
So multiple things. They are in an environment where they are constantly reading a lot and writing about and having conversations with smaller groups. And so it's reading, writing, and conversations and really great mentorship. And so the outcome that we hope for them and that we have seen is that they are critical thinkers. They're better at, you know, problem solving than most. It's not for everyone, but it's also not just for the smartest of the smarts.
Right.
So we have about 40 some honor students across campus. And so they are, you know, a lot of times they are leaders, but sometimes they're not. Sometimes they're introverted and but they still love the honors program because they love to read and they love to be in groups that do talk about what they do read. And so that's...
It sounds like a deep dive.
It is a deep dive. And the outcomes are, we do have students that get into really great grad schools, and not only medical school, but for other things as well. And so it's the student that is wanting to go beyond here, but it's also for the student who just wants to do something like this.
Yeah.
And the one thing that I think is really interesting about our particular honors program that I've done a little bit of research of other honors programs at other places, we actually have a unique honors program that everyone across campus can take. Whereas other institutions, there are certain majors that can't be in the honors program, in their honors programs. And so ours, we now can have our nursing students in the honors program. And we have several nurses that have just started.
Yeah.
The first cohorts are going through right now. So that's a very new thing. And, you know, it took a lot of work.
Yeah, I bet to figure out how they can fit all that in with their particular coursework that they have to take. Yeah.
And all the scheduling.
Yeah.
The scheduling. It is very complicated with the nursing program. And so we figured it out. So
nice work.
Love that.
Yeah.
It's a big project, I'm sure.
Inclusive honors program.
Yeah.
I like it.
So what kind of students tend to thrive? You kind of talked about that in honors. How can faculty advisors recognize and encourage them to consider it? How do we see those students? Yeah,
so we actually hope they start in the honors program before and have decided before they come to PUC. Okay. However, we have had faculty, particularly in the intro classes, maybe in English 101 and even Comm 105, that they identify students who think a little bit differently. And I've actually had last year several of the English professors recommend several students into the honors program, and I've contacted those students, and they have actually joined the honors program and have thrived in it.
So. What a cool thing to be a student and get a call from a dean being like, hey, we noticed you. I think you'd be a good fit for this cool program we have. Like, I don't know. That seems like a huge honor.
Yeah.
No pun intended. Yeah. Sorry. It was unintentional.
Oh, boy. So sorry. Nice work.
No pun intended.
It was not intended at all.
It's an honor to be an honor student.
Yeah. Obviously.
Obviously.
So what do you see? I know you've mentioned several benefits and outcomes of the honors program, but looking at the whole person, academically, personally, professionally, spiritually, what are some of the biggest benefits you think for students who join the honors program?
Other than, you know, grad school, but also you are with a community of actually not like-minded. There are very diverse views.
True, different majors.
Different majors in that. So you're getting to know those people, you know, and so there are a lot of benefits both spiritually and socially. Mm-hmm. It's a community within the PUC community, which I think is we're all looking for that.
Yeah.
And they are all looking for that. And so they can really connect with each other on multiple levels there. And a lot of our, not all, but a lot of our honor students will become student leaders. Mm-hmm. And or maybe they're, you see them in the choirs or in the orchestra and the upcoming wind ensemble.
Yeah. Bringing it back.
Yeah.
Yep.
So you see them across campus and you see them thriving and just, or not. I think they can just be in the honors program and just be happy there.
Yeah, no pressure.
And no pressure to be seen across campus.
So that's those are not requirements, right?
No, that's just a natural.
Yeah.
There's such a diverse. You know, I'd like to say that there's one thing that all honor students can come out with, but there's so many different things.
Well, it makes it a personalized experience then. So you get out of honors what you need to. And that's.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe that's the one thing.
Maybe. Maybe. You kind of have talked about this, but how do you see honors shaping the campus culture overall? So you said a lot of them do become leaders, but do you see it, the honors program shaping culture on campus in particular ways?
That's a good question.
I know, right?
Yeah. How do they shape campus culture? Mm-hmm. They are part of the campus culture. And so... They're coming within it, and so they're hopefully as they become juniors and they go out into the topics courses and the other courses, they're able to have those different conversations that they've learned to have within the honors courses and bring that throughout the academic culture. They could work with the social culture as well, and we're continually working on mentorship programs and ways in which the honors group can feel like more of a community. And we're doing that with more and more outings. They've actually asked for it. And I don't know if you know, but our Student Senate has an honors representative on it. You know, it's by department, but they also include honors in that. And the Senate representative has been great at connecting with me and making sure that, hey, let's do a poll for the honor students and see what they want to do and the type of activities they want. And, you know, we've done that and we're continuing to do that.
Awesome. So the kind of shifting gears a little, but the class you taught this summer in Italy, that was an honors course.
Yes, that was an honors course. It was Renaissance, Truth and Beauty. And I taught that with Dr. Kent Davis, and he happened to bring his wife, Rochelle Davis, along as well. So she was a great bonus to our program this summer.
So tell us a little bit about that class. What was it about, and what was the experience like for you and the students?
So in the past, I mentioned that I had taught a course in the past for the honors program. There used to be a course that was required of every honors major called Beauty. It was called Beauty, and it was about art and aesthetics, and it was usually, somewhere in Europe.
Somewhere beautiful.
We've taught it. Yeah, exactly.
Everywhere in Europe is beautiful. Yes. What are you talking about?
Yeah. So not here. No.
So
just
we've actually, it is beautiful here.
We
could teach it here, but we want to get away from here and have that.
Yeah, new experience.
New experience. Yep. So that when you come back, you can see the beauty here, but I think I've already sort of answered some questions that you may be asking me in the future. But but we've taught that in the past, and the first time I taught it was in 2003, 2004, I think, and we taught that in England. We stayed at Newbold on the campus there, and then we've actually taught it in France before. Okay. We've taught it in Paris. We did a week here on campus, and because there's no Adventist campus we could stay at in Paris. So we just did a week here, did all our textbook work and our classroom work here. And then we actually, it was a experiment. And then we did 2 weeks in Paris. We've done it in Italy. And again, it was called Beauty. But we've changed the program to where you don't have to take Beauty any longer. What we do have as a requirement is two honors 380 courses, which are these seminars that are always going to be changing and different. Mm. And so, you know, we've taught courses like a course called Pilgrimage, one called Hybridity. And so the honors director asks the different faculty across campus, hey, are you interested in teaching an honors course? Can you think of something interesting that you would love to teach? And we've done that, and they've come up with their own courses that would fit within the honors framework. Mm. And so part of that, those honors 380s, we teach them across campus, but then the plan was, when this was created, to teach them also abroad. So you have to take two. So you could take the two on campus if you can't go abroad. But if you do want that experience to go abroad, you can go abroad. Mm-hmm. And so our plan is to do every other year. The plan was initially every other year. And the last time it was taught was in 2019.
Oh, wow. And that was
in London. But then COVID happened. Yeah. And so that stopped it for a couple of years. And we were going to go last summer, but we just didn't have the critical mass. Mm. So we did it this past summer in 2025. And it was the same whole plan to go into Italy to use the Villa Aurora campus, which is a beautiful campus. They have great food, wonderful people. And we piggybacked off of the ACA group, which would day trips or even a 2-day trip to Rome. And we were with them whenever we could be. But usually we were by ourselves because we had full access to Florence. The campus is in Florence, in the city outskirts of Florence, and you could just take a light rail into Florence. It takes 15 minutes, and they gave us a full month pass.
Wow, very nice.
And so you could go anytime you want. Ooh-hoo. And so the course was – so I went over the back – story of the course that I taught. The course that I actually taught was called Renaissance Truth and Beauty. And that's why Kent Davis taught it. Was he was the truth, I was the beauty. which is
so
really
many things to unpack in that statement.
Which is really it's about science and art. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Particularly during the Renaissance time. So we studied, you know, Da Vinci and Galileo, but we also studied all the artists of the Renaissance and we actually talked about the Renaissance and why we call it the Renaissance. Mm-hmm. And there were actually many Renaissances.
Yeah.
And so we wanted to be very distinct in that this was the Italian Renaissance that we're referring to. Mm. And we talked about the Medici family, who were the patrons of the Italian Renaissance, and the artists. They were patrons of, if you know, Botticelli and Da Vinci and all the different artists of the Italian Renaissance. So that was the course, and we used a classroom there on the Villa Aurora campus, had really great discussions around a table. There were 8 students that went, and Dr. Davis and I, and we tried, so as much as we tried not to split up, we wanted to integrate as much. We tried not to separate the science and the art as much as we could, but we... You know, sometimes you had to do that because we're talking about science or we're talking about art. And so it was an experiment.
Yeah.
But I think it was an experiment that went very well.
Oh, good.
Good.
And so that's the course. The long, drawn out answer to your question.
No, but I was in the zone. I want to take that class now. Sign me up.
Yeah, we wanted more than just the course number and name. So that was great. Yeah, thank you.
It may change, you know, and most likely it'll change next time. Yeah. We'll think of a different concept for a course that can be taught somewhere abroad.
I have some ideas.
Oh, great.
Just because I want to go somewhere.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel an ulterior motive happening right now. But how do you choose the location? Is it based on what you're teaching that you like pick a topic and then decide where it makes sense to teach it? Or are they independent of each other?
Yes and no. So several years ago, we thought we wanted to go back to Italy and teach something that was, you know, initially we were thinking art, science, and religion, but that to pack that into just a few weeks, that was a lot. So we kept it to that. But religion always always seeps in.
Yeah.
Which is a great thing. Yeah. As it should for our honors program and for us being an Adventist institution. But, yeah. And it quite often did, especially with, I mean, that was sort of always the elephant in the room with science during the Renaissance time and even with art during the Renaissance time. Mm. So it was always something that we talked about and discussed. And I'm not a theologian, but but so I love theology.
How does the location play into the learning and connection?
Oh, I'm not answering your question. Yeah.
That's a great redirect.
So we wanted to go there first. And then what made sense is really the second thing that, you know, what makes sense to teach there. And so since I had already taught beauty, I felt like I had the tools to teach that, but I hadn't taught anything science related. Mm. And so I think bringing a scientist along was a huge stretch for me to even talk about that, because I am not a STEM or science person. So I was so glad. But here's the thing with Dr. Davis, with Dr. Kent Davis, who is a scientist. Mm-hmm. He is an art. He is a humanities person as much as he is a STEM person.
Didn't know that about him.
Well, he won't it. I don't know if he even knows it or admits it.
He said it on it's taped. Oh Kent, yeah. So
no, but
we know now.
You know, we've been friends for I wouldn't even say years, decades.
Yeah.
And he's always been a reader. Mm-hmm. And we've always had really great conversations about books and even religion and politics and things like that. And so I know that he is the right type of person for our honors program. And as he happens to be a scientist. Yeah. So
it was a good partnership is what you're saying. The two of you teaching this class.
I think so. He may think it was a horrible partnership.
Maybe we should have Kent on here next.
Yeah. Let's have Kent and the students.
Yeah.
We'll see how they
He's like, oh, I'm never going to teach that again.
Yeah. So did anything about the trip surprise you or give you ideas for how to enrich courses back on campus?
So I don't know if there's a yes to that question. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Surprises. I was surprised that I could talk about science. Not that I did a great job or anything, but again, since I'm not a science-y type person, but having those discussions, I think they were very important and interesting for our students in the honors program. But I feel like what we can bring back is really the appreciation of things and of beauty. And of, you know, like I said, I already sort of gave you a foreshadowing or about coming back here to a place that is very beautiful that people travel from all over the world to come see and see
they
it in, in those eyes. Because as Americans go into Europe, we're like, everything is so beautiful here and it's so wonderful. And seeing that here, I think, is important for us. And to just see it in the everyday, not just in the Napa Valley, but in the everyday.
Yeah.
And, but yeah.
That's nice. And so what do you enjoy most about working with honor students? I'm going to guess these trips are probably...
That would be
my answer, but I'm going to let you answer.
Thoughtful discussions, though. Like, I've heard... Yeah. I've talked to honors students and other professors who have taught honors classes, and, like, the discussions that they have and the conversation that happens in the classroom is just sounds incredible to me. Like, that's real academia.
Oh, yeah. Sort of the pinnacle of what we want for our students is having... These really deep, high-end discussions that just are life-changing, and they open your world. They broaden your horizons, and all the different cliches I can think of. They are true. They are very true. And so, and when you see those aha moments with these honor students, that's why you go into academia.
Whether it's here on campus or in another country, that you see those moments, they're all great.
And they're highlighted when you are in another country.
And
it's great and everything, but you know, and it's, you know, to be honest, it's not all roses and wonderful things over there, mainly because it's so hot.
True.
And I'm not, I don't mind warmth, but it's, I don't know. I felt, You feel the effects of global warming and the heat. It's just hot, hot, hot.
Yeah.
And I've been there before and it's been hot. And maybe I'm just older and can stand it less. And that's why I complain about it. But and Florence is very crowded.
And except at 5 in the morning.
Yeah, exactly. So
which I know you experience.
That's what made the trip for me actually is getting up early. And I would run, and actually Dr. Davis would get up early, but he would walk. So we would go on our own journeys at sunrise. Mm. I would run, he would walk, but he walks probably as fast as I run. He walks very fast.
I was about to say, he clearly walks fast.
He does. And so we did that in Rome, and it made me love Rome even more. Yeah. Now that there's not a lot of people around it.
Right.
Going back to the beauty, though, without the crowds, you can probably see more of that
absolutely
beauty that you went there to see.
Absolutely.
It's not absorbed.
That is what made the trip for me. And if I could have any advice to anybody who's ever traveling to any of those places during the summer is try to get there before the crowds to enjoy it and, you know, just experience it. You know, even if you're going there during the crowds, try to do it once without the crowds.
And it sounds amazing.
It was a cool experience. Yeah.
To kind of, I feel like when I'm in a space where there aren't other people, I get the feel for what it's quote really like. Mm-hmm. And I feel this a lot when I drive across like Eastern Oregon when I'm visiting my in-laws. Like there's a lot of open nothing out there. There's a lot of rangeland, a lot of just hills. And because when I was a kid, I loved the Oregon Trail so much. I just imagined in my head, like, pretend that I'm one of the original people who saw this land after. Okay, the natives were there. Don't get me wrong. I'm not going to step on any toes there. But, like, the first white people who came from the east to go west and explore that territory for the first time, like, coming in those tiny wagons that they spent months in. And here I am flying down the freeway at 70 miles an hour, trying to see the landscape in the way that they saw it. But the same thing would, I would believe, go in like European cities or any other city in the world when you're there without the crowds of modern everything.
Yeah.
Just to experience like what would it might have been like for Da Vinci to be wandering through the streets you know, just, I don't know. It makes history come a bit more alive, especially since we don't have that much history here. Yeah. We're the babies.
Yeah, we were on the train, Dr. Davis and I and the students, we were on the train to Rome, and we're taking the fast train through Tuscany. And I don't know if you've heard it, but I hear all the time, oh, the Napa Valley is just like Tuscany.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. We hear that all the time, except there are not these walled off cities in the Napa Valley, you know, these fortresses and everything that you would see in Tuscany, and these trees that are so old, these Italian cypresses that are just humongous. So it's similar in climate and that there's agriculture, but at the same time, it's so different. And the clouds, we notice the clouds are different there because they're on a peninsula, you know, Italian peninsula versus, you know, the continent.
Yeah, so, true.
The things you don't think of.
Yeah.
I didn't think the clouds. I thought we all saw the same clouds.
Nope, apparently not.
I think we're going to shift gears a little bit to more of the School of Arts, Humanities, and Professions.
Okay.
And so from your vantage point, what's something that's innovative happening in the school that excites you?
I'd like to say there's one thing, but there's so many things.
Yeah. Well, that's good great
news.
Right?
Yeah, there's a lot of different things. Yeah. And I don't even know where to start. But, you know, of course, there's the master's in communication is one of the things. Yeah. And, you know, just a lot of the things that are growing and building and the collaborations. One of the collaborations we can mention is the gig economy course that is being taught.
Yes. Right.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to seeing where that goes.
And that's a collaboration between communication, music, and business.
Yes.
Right? Yes.
Yes.
Which is an interesting combination.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think it might not be apparent right off what the connection is. I think like maybe just somebody hearing it for the first time, what? Those don't make any sense together, but they so do.
But they absolutely do. Because, you know, musicians as well as writers and even artists and designers, they work in a gig economy. And they have to learn things like communication and
finances.
Promotion and then the business part of things. So it's a great collaboration that I think
I'm so excited about that class.
Yeah,
I'm
and so excited. I think it just needs to be a requirement for certain for a lot of different majors.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, even dentists could use a course
it's
like
true,
that.
True, it's true.
Not that they're gig, but that helps. You know, as a small business person.
I was about to say the idea of running your own business. That's really what it's about. Because when you're all the things,
yes,
you need to know how to handle that.
Yeah,
being all the things is a lot. Yeah, and I'm excited about the collaborations. That's just like, I don't know. I get really excited when people work together. And so I'm excited to see how this all works out and like all the different pieces.
Yeah.
Because I feel like you and Kent working together on that class in Italy is also, in my mind, like a really cool collaboration across schools even.
Yeah.
Yeah. So do you see other connections happening across schools right now?
I see the importance of these connections and collaborations, and you're talking about across schools. So within the school as well as across schools. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the other deans and I work very well together, and we talk more about more of the how to fix and solve problems versus collaboration. But I think it's important that we do talk about ways in which we can collaborate. But here's the thing is we're learning from each other, different things that can be done so that we can take it back to our school if it's appropriate or necessary to do those types of things.
That's kind of the benefit of having the three dean model, right? That you can think about those things, those bigger picture things of how we can collaborate and work together.
Yeah.
And it's not just the leaders who can do that either.
Right, of course.
Anybody can come up with an idea of how to collaborate and bring it to other people and try to start working together on their own, right? We don't have to wait for the boss to come tell us to work together, right?
Absolutely. No, they can do it. But the thing is, I'm also talking to somebody in the School of Sciences. Hey, they're doing this thing there. Mm-hmm. And then I'll say, hey, in the School of Arts, Humanities, Professions, they're doing this thing. We should do this thing too, or something like it, or something better than that.
Or, or do it together.
Or do it. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So how do you see SOAP, the School of Arts, Humanities, and Professions?
Some still, like that, some don't.
Still working on that.
It's so much easier to say than the whole name.
And it's in my head, so I say it many times, and people are like, what's SOAP?
we'll still work on that. But how do you see SOAP contributing to the larger campus culture at PUC?
I feel like they are a huge part of the campus culture because most of the parts of culture that you do see that's apparent, whether it's, you know, our theology majors who do, you know, who are up front a lot, or our musicians who are up front a lot, or our, you know, a lot of our leadership. But I feel like you do see that across the campus for different reasons. But I feel like SOAP is a big part of that because we are everyone else who is not nursing or sciences.
Right.
So speaking of SOAP, you know, School of Sciences, they're SOS.
Oh dear.
I get emails from Amy Wyrick from SOS and things like that. I'm like,
what do you need?
Speaking of SOAP, I don't know if we talked about this at the beginning. I don't remember so long ago, but who is part of SOAP?
Oh, right? Yeah, that's a
because
good question.
Because it is just everybody else besides nursing
and the sciences.
But what is the makeup of SOAP?
Well, I'd be happy to tell you.
Wonderful.
We're going to test
it,
you.
I have it memorized in my head alphabetically.
Are you serious?
Well, I have
I'm sure he has to say it a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, I have to say a lot. So I could do it two different ways. I could do SOAP as Arts, Humanities, Professions, or I can just do it alphabetically. I usually do it alphabetically.
But can you sing it?
I should make we should come up with a jingle.
Yes.
or, you know,
music
like,
should come up with a jingle. That's their area.
You know, there's the state song, you know, the Alabama, Arizona.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, actually. That's exactly what I was thinking.
But we have aviation, we have business, we have communication, we have education, we have English, we have history, we have music, we have theology, and we have visual arts. We have world languages too, which is part of communication world languages. So, but we also have the honors program. And so that is SOAP.
That's a lot of departments.
It is. And a lot of very different focuses.
Very different. We have our arts and we have our humanities, which are very specific. And then, you know, just think about having both music and aviation under the same school.
Yeah.
You know, that's very different. But all very awesome. All awesome. I was just in a new faculty orientation yesterday and today.
Oh, yeah.
And I am so excited for our new faculty coming in.
Yeah.
And we have some great, I think you've interviewed at least one of them.
We've chatted with a few of them. Yeah. A couple.
We've had, well, I guess Tony is not technically faculty, but we had talked to him. But mm-hmm. then Victoria,
I heard
new
you
math
talked to
professor.
Victoria.
And we
and
have
Christian.
Yes.
Christian, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we have another one scheduled, a couple scheduled actually.
Yeah.
Leah. They're mm-hmm. they're on the books, but yeah.
Just hearing their stories.
It's been really interesting.
I was there, yes. I heard some great stories of how they got here to campus. So
yeah.
it's interesting.
A lot of God moments.
Yes.
Coming here to campus.
Well, and talking to them, I've seen a couple of them outside of the podcast studio too and just kind of chatted. And it seems like the ones that we've interviewed and the ones that I've talked to have seemed really happy with their decision to come here.
Mm-hmm.
And I know they just got here, so rose-colored glasses and all that, so let's be
real. We'll ask them again in a year.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
But I think that the positive attitude is something that we can cash in on, the positive perspective, and like, let's all just maybe glean from them because they're seeing us with new eyes, right? And like maybe adopt some of that for ourselves again. But
and let's not bring them down.
No, exactly. But yes. I think that bringing that positive energy, they all seem like they're going to contribute really nicely to the community
absolutely.
We already have here. So
So how many is that new in SOAP?
In SOAP we have three.
Three
or
new.
Two and a half.
Half a person, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have to share them.
But yes, you do have to share them. But
which is fine.
Yeah. So the new faculty are across the three different schools.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
I think that's great. True.
Yeah.
So kind of combining everything we've been talking about from honors, Italy, other collaborations and things happening, new faculty, whatever. What have you learned about the kinds of opportunities that really make a difference for students here at PUC?
That is a huge mouthful of a question.
Well, what have you learned about the kinds of opportunities that really make a difference for students?
The opportunities that make a difference for students mm-hmm. with SOAP, honors, everything.
What? Just in general, pick one. Pick one or do
whatever
in general.
You want,
what
yeah.
just what kinds of opportunities do you think are most valuable and useful to the students here at PUC?
Well, you know, a lot of times students, when they pick both a major and an institution, they're thinking very practically. Yeah. They're thinking very transactionally. And, you know, I understand that. But at the same time, this is a very important part of your life
mm-hmm.
where yeah. you are getting your lifelong friends and community and or not. Maybe it's just it's going to be a great you want this to be one of the best experiences that you can have. And this is a place where you can have that.
Yeah.
And when I do talk to alumni, and I talk to a lot of them, they just have so many great memories of PUC. And they're just like, I loved it there. And they just, they have this snapshot in their mind of what it was and what it was like. And I know we have generations, because I've been here a long time.
Yeah.
I've been here 30 years. So I've
wow.
seen multiple generations come through. And they just, a lot of them come back with just such great memories. And so really taking those opportunities of, you know, whether it is joining a musical ensemble, because that's a community there.
Yes.
Whether it's joining the honors program, because that's a community there, whether it's joining a club like the Soul Club or, you know, any of the affinity clubs, those are ways in which you can find those communities, find a community, find your people, connect with them, and sometimes go out of your comfort zone, sometimes stay within your comfort zone. Mm-hmm. But there's so many opportunities here that you can take. And I feel like it was fairly broad before. It sort of shrunk and it's broadening again. That's how I feel.
Okay.
Like it's
nice.
Been.
Yeah. Yeah. So how can faculty and staff better support those students as mm-hmm. they're exploring, as they're taking risks, as they're
figuring
growing
themselves
into
out.
Their calling?
So other
yeah.
than the day-to-day in classroom. You know, we do have those opportunities where you can see them outside the classroom, like pre-Vespers and other things. But as advisors specifically, and especially, I think advisors can recommend, you know, they can sort of see and feel how students are doing, mm-hmm. and see the need of this student needs to really join an affinity group, or this mm-hmm. student really needs to join the honors program, or this student, you know,
yeah.
advisors have that power mm-hmm. to recommend different things to their advisees, their students. And we've had some great advisors. Mm-hmm. We've had some not so great advisors, but very few of those.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Those are the ones that you hear the complaints about.
Right,
but
of course.
Mm-hmm. More often than not, we have really great advisors who mm-hmm. do those things, that do recommend those things. But I would just remind them to continue to do those things.
Yeah.
You know, they do have their professional goals in mind. And here's the other end of it. I have seen students who like, okay, I want to join honors. I want to do choir. I want to do this club. I want to do that club. I want to be an RA. They do way too many. And they spread themselves thin.
Yeah.
And that's another thing you could tell students, do not spread yourself so thin.
Yes.
I've seen it actually harm students when they do
spread themselves
too thin. Yeah,
finding you need to encourage the balance.
Finding a good balance, yeah.
I don't think we talk about advising as much as we should as far as your role, because we focus a lot on the teaching and maybe the committees and all that stuff. And it's just kind of like, yeah, advise your students, make sure you do this, but there's not more intentionality with it.
There's the practical parts of advising, which are very important.
Yeah.
But then there's also the other parts, which I think we need to remind advisors about.
Yeah. I think that's one of my more favorite parts
of your job, is it the advisor?
Yeah, is to be able to sit down with students and say, what are your career goals? What do you love? Like, where do you see yourself going, and how are we meeting that here, right?
Yeah.
And getting to know them outside of the classroom. I think that's really interesting.
And you can gauge if a student has a capacity to do more. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. when I was advising graphic design students, I could gauge, this student should get a business minor, or this student should double major in this, or this student should go abroad, or this student should not do this or that. So I think, you know, those conversations, you're right. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed those conversations with my advisees much more than I remember now that we're talking about it. But here's the thing. You also hear a lot of really great information about other teachers.
Oh, that's true.
They're like, okay, you need to take this, you know, this general class. And they're like, can I take it from this one teacher?
Right.
Because I heard they're really good. I'm like, sure, you can take it. And then, but it's during this other time where you're taking this other class. Mm-hmm. So, you know, those sort of conversations. But
yeah. And those are not always things you're going to get in the classroom, right?
Yeah.
Like you said, you get that sense, this student, maybe they would really benefit from adding this minor.
Yeah.
We don't always think about that. And you don't see that necessarily in the classroom when they're doing other work. But when you're talking with them, you can go, here, if you did this little thing or this certificate, I often talk to my students about the conflict resolution certificate.
Uh-huh. Mm.
This would be really valuable to you in what direction you're looking for your career, because sometimes you need to combine things, right, that would be really effective.
Mm.
So I think those are valuable.
I just had a pastor contact me this week about that particular certificate,
wanting
to do it.
Yeah. So that is a great idea for pastors to get that certificate.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Pastors, leaders, teachers, they should all get it.
Yeah.
We should all do it, all of us, honestly.
I do. I encourage most of my students.
If you encounter other people at any point in your life,
you're going to conflict with them. Yes. It's so true.
Well, you know, one thing that I do want to say, I'm coming at this whole student relationship thing from a different perspective than you guys, because I'm not a faculty member.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't interact with the students nearly as much.
But I feel like you do interact with a lot of students.
I do. And that's where I'm going, because I feel like we've been talking a lot about the faculty side of how the faculty can impact and connect with students. And I feel like staff
too,
have this opportunity. And I have said before, I know that if one of my colleagues hears this podcast, she's going to say, but you said, Becky, that you never get to see students. You don't get those relationships. But I take it back,
you
Rochelle.
You do say that.
I take it back.
You said it to me too, Becky. Yeah. Okay, so you better.
I think it has to be, and this is where I am going to admit my own fault in this, is that it has to be intentional. Like, I have to actually take the initiative to connect with the students. And no, I don't have a classroom full of 10 or 15 or 20 or 50 students. But I do have a few student workers who I see either weekly or daily.
And you are a mentor and influence, whether you like it or not.
Yeah, whether they like it or not.
That's the truth.
But
yeah.
I think that I've had so many conversations with students who work for me about their futures and their relationships and their jobs and their clinicals and their classes and all of the things. Not with every student, but with a lot of them.
Yeah.
And the opportunity to connect with them and make an impact and just be a listening ear, even outside of the classroom for them, like just to have another adult in their life who actually sees them and cares about them like that. I think that has potential to be something valuable as well. So I think that we all have an opportunity to do that. And I love that about this community, that we look out for each other and that we're willing to do that. Yeah. And I feel honored.
You're an educator, Becky.
Stop it.
I keep telling her that.
This is not telling her. But I think what I do want to end this part with, what I'm talking about, is I want to say that I feel honored that the students will actually talk with me and share their lives with me, because that is a privilege in my mind. So I'm grateful.
That is.
We love you, students.
Yes. And I just, I encourage other staff and faculty, but I'm coming at it from a staff perspective. I encourage other staff to take those opportunities as well, because I also think in talking with some of the people, I mean, we've done a lot of these podcast interviews at this point, and a lot of the, like, one of the themes that comes up a lot is connection and relationship. And even with the students that we've talked to, they've said the same thing, that something that was so impactful for them is like being seen. And that's crucial to keeping them engaged, to keeping them here, to keeping them on track.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's my TED talk for today.
All right. Well, she's done with that. So
moving on.
So Milbert, if you could dream big for SOAP or the honors program, what would you love to see happen in the next 3 to 5 years?
Other than more students. More collaboration, really, and just a really clear, you know, and this will bring the students, I think, is the collaboration, is the programs that will, because right now, you know, particularly in the, let's talk about the humanities, the students these days, maybe in academies or high school, may not see a clear path to a career through humanities. Because it's not, you know, ABC, or it's not this straight line. But it is such an amazing and important opportunity if they do go into the humanities to be a very impactful person in whatever career they want, other than nursing or sciences.
Which are also great.
Which are, nothing about that, but it's just, you know, I think humanities, because, you know, right now that's the area that needs a little bit of attention in our, for our young people to understand the importance of that. And here's the other thing is, you know, there's a lot of areas, whether throughout the campus, whether it is humanities, that I think people are starting to shy away from, mainly because of AI. They're like, oh, why would I go into that if AI is going to take over everything?
Right.
But
they have robot surgeons too, let me just point out.
Yeah.
They do.
But they need the you know, the person to operate that. My brother is a surgeon and he uses robotic things.
Really? Yeah.
But you need a person to do those things.
Right.
And the same is true for the writer.
Yeah, true. I was about to bring that up. Yeah. Thank you, Milbert.
You need the person to really understand the writing to be able to tell AI what to do.
Yep. You have to have conversations with AI.
Yeah.
You do.
You have to, sometimes it's arguments.
Exactly.
And sometimes, yes, like me last night, I literally typed in, let's start over. So it's not perfect.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think, you know, we need people out there who can think critically, who can understand and analyze things from a human perspective. And I think SOAP and a lot of the different areas in SOAP, because that's it's very important for them to understand that, because, you know, we're still going to need pilots. Yeah. AI can't do everything. They can help you. They can be a tool for our pilots, and same with our writers, and same with our musicians, same with our artists. It's not going to fully take over, but here's the thing, you know, when you're in those areas, what, you know, we definitely need to embrace it in a way that is responsible, ethical, and useful.
Agreed.
So my hope for us, other than, you know, it's just to respond to the needs of the students who are wanting to get into careers that is really true for them. What I hate and have always hated to see as an educator was people going into a career for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. It's sad.
And I've advised several people who were going into the wrong career for the wrong reasons to go into the right career for the right reasons. So that's one of my joys.
Yeah.
Is, and you know, I guess we don't need to read between the lines, but you know, I'm Filipino. So I could just say I've known so many people going into say nursing because their parents told them to, not because they have a, you know, they want to take care of people.
Yeah.
They just want the paycheck at the end of the day. And that's not, you don't want that nurse.
Right. No. And it's not fulfilling either. As the person with that career, you don't want to be in a position where you're doing it because someone told you to, or you're doing it because you thought the check would be nice. Like, and I think that the generations coming up behind us have figured that out to a certain extent. I think that they're looking for careers more that can fulfill them and contribute positively to society and their community.
Yeah.
Then I think our generation necessarily did.
Yeah. And I really don't, I hope I don't sound like I'm dogging on nurses or science, you know, pre-med or anything, because they are my family and my friends. Mm-hmm. And they're very important, but I also don't want people to go into the wrong thing for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and if the right reason, the right thing is in the humanities or in the arts or in the professions, then they need to be here for that.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Well, it sounds like you are in the right place for the right reasons, Milbury.
It does.
Seems like you really enjoy what you do.
Yeah.
I do.
And you're passionate about it.
I do. And again, it's always trying to seek and find the balance within everything. And I guess hopefully you are all seeking and finding balance in everything you're doing.
Working on it.
Tara.
Tara. I knew that was directed at me. I knew it was.
Well, it's because we know you.
Yeah.
Overachiever.
We don't want
what's
you
balance?
To...
I don't understand this word.
If that's your happy place, then fine. But we don't want you to burn out. That's the thing. Is we don't ever want any faculty or staff here to burn out.
Right. Well, and I think for me, that's why I do certain things, because it keeps me from burning out, because I'm really passionate about certain things.
Yep.
That's awesome.
So, yeah.
Even if it looks like work, sometimes it's not, because we go into the fields we go into. What we were just
because
talking about.
We like it.
We like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So did I spend last night writing an article? Yes, I did. Did I enjoy it? Yeah, I did. So, I mean, I didn't get
to. Just, You're not working.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that's a great thing about a lot of the people here and the faculty, because they really are passionate about what they do. They're doing it outside of the classroom because we love it.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that comes across in the classroom. That's why I do it outside of the classroom,
because
it's going to come across in the classroom. I like this. This is my passion. So,
yeah. And this is why you should be excited about it, too.
That's
you tell the students. Yeah.
That's right.
So do you have a particular story or moment that captures why you do what you do, Albert?
I don't really know if I have that, but I'll tell you this. You know, what the best part of... I'll just tell you the best part of my job.
That sounds
good. Yeah, let's go.
The best part of my job as Dean of the School of Arts, Humanities, and Professions is actually, I know this sounds weird, but graduation. And as sad as I am to see people go, my favorite part is actually reading the name of the person graduating. Mm. And people say, oh, you do such a great job at it. It's because I love it.
Yeah,
I love if it's a difficult name, I love saying the difficult name, because here's the thing, you know, my name is Milbert. It's not a very common name, but you know, when people call me Milbert after meeting me one time, that's great. I've gotten Merton, I've gotten Merlin, I've gotten Milton. So what does that tell me? So if I'm saying somebody's name and saying it correctly,
those, on one of the most important days of their lives.
On one of the most important days. They were seen. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they're celebratory and everything. And so that there's so many reasons why I love graduation and why I love saying the names of the person graduating.
Well, so you've seen them on their journey here. And now you're seeing that final step.
Absolutely. And there have been more than a dozen times where I had to choke back my tears because I knew that particular person. Mm-hmm. And what it took to get to that point.
Mm. Yep. I've heard that from people in records as well.
Oh, yeah.
That they see a lot of the struggles and the determination and the energy that goes into making it to those steps across that stage.
Absolutely.
And it's meaningful every time.
Yeah.
And that's what's so cool about our campus.
Yeah.
That the dean is up there saying those names and that you know those people and you know their struggle.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, absolutely. So I hope that doesn't go away. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
And actually, I think Lindsay asked me, she said this past graduation, she's like, can you just do that for everybody next time? Because I don't know if the other deans love it as much as I do. Mm-hmm. So she can see that I love it and I enjoy it. Aww. So I might. I don't know. We'll see. Yeah. How you know a bit about graduation planning, so you'll know. You know how it will go next year, but we'll see.
Well, but I
love planning graduation. I love planning things and planning things with people. Mm-hmm. So that's also a great part of my job is planning events.
Nice. Yeah. I love that I have people around me that like to plan events.
Yep.
Because I do not.
Oh, really?
I do not like to plan events.
Sign me up. Yeah. I'll help you out.
Perfect.
I'll find something else you can do for me. Mm.
All right.
I'm going to ask the final question.
Oh, there's more questions.
There's
I thought that was the final question.
Well, I don't know. It's such a good space to end on there.
We could cut it if it's not a good answer.
Yeah. I'll ask it and we'll see. So what do you think is the most important message you have for your colleagues across campus?
Well, I think the theme is... And I think that's a good final question.
Okay.
I think the theme is really balance. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, we are all, many of us are these content experts, these geeks of our trade. And so, and you know, you're working at a small academic institution where you're doing so much.
Yeah.
But if you don't find the balance, you are at risk of something. I don't know what, but of something. So find the balance, Tara.
This is for everybody, Gilbert.
And find the balance, new faculty, find the balance, you know, SOAP and SOS and School of Nursing. Mm-hmm. Everybody, you know, across campus. Yeah. Find your balance. Love what you do. And once you do find that balance, then you have the energy to work with the students, to mentor the students, to work with your colleagues and have community. So
nice. I think we won't cut it. I think that's pretty good. That's good.
That was very good.
It was. Okay. Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us today, Milbert. I know you have to run.
Oh, I'm 4 minutes late to my meeting.
Yeah, you better run. So
we will close out. Here we go.
Yes. So if today's conversation gave you a new perspective, sparked a question, or stirred something worth sitting with, subscribe to the podcast so you can keep exploring with us. We're here to uplift, encourage, and remind you that you're not alone in this journey.
And if you're on Instagram, follow us at @uncharted_PUC for uplifting campus stories, fresh perspectives, and a little inspiration for the road ahead. Until next time, explore boldly, care deeply, and lead bravely.